This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good evening, Mr. Pete Dillon.
Oh, hello, Serena Ryan. It's a bit late at night for me to be out of bed, I've decided.
I know, it's a smidge after 11 o'clock on a lovely balmy Tuesday night. You're listening to Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9. I'm just going to adjust myself.
Oh, in the nicest possible way, of course.
Yes, yes, that's my microphone. I can't really hear. Oh, there we go. Ah, oh, how's your week, love?
Oh, well, look, I went and got my dark on Saturday night. You would have been terribly proud. Oh. I've never seen so many sensible haircuts and comfortable shoes in one place.
It's a lesbian. A festival of the Crocs?
Well, a lesbian of the go-go, I tell you. You should have been there.
No, my God, I was out doing something way more fun.
You know, I mean, popping them down. I went and saw K.D. Lang, and I wasn't intending to. My newly minted husband decided that he had a spare ticket and I should go with. So off I went with the husband. You know, shorts and T-shirt for a nice cold Melbourne night.
Wasn't that cold?
It got cold a bit later, let me tell you. And we got our KD on. And some other woman, random woman, and I'm doing a karmic thank you to the random woman who came past and said, my husband's sick and he couldn't make it. Would anybody like a free ticket? Can they get somebody here shortly? So my sister, who worships at the temple of KD, I rang her and I said, can you be here in 20 minutes?
Is she of the faith?
Look, the jury's out. Let's
just leave it that way. Right, there's a whiff of patchouli. Yeah.
Oh, very strong
one. Oh, look at her. Very nice.
So she's come along and she's now crossed off her bucket list seeing K.D. Lang sing Hallelujah live.
And was she wearing any shoes?
K.D.?
Yeah.
Yes, strangely so, which is unlike her.
Because, you know, I bumped into her last week in Sydney.
Yes, and at the airport or something.
No, I was in Sydney for some TV stuff that I'm doing and I ordered coffee next to her and she was wearing a rather fetching chambre shirt.
Oh, she's very fond of her natural fibres in muted colours, I think.
Well, this was lovely. Might it was kind of a pale blue. She's significantly less chubby than I remember her.
Although she's addressing less.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, she'd become an Ashley Cleopatra, I think. Yes. You know, so look, oh,
we've
you
both
know,
had our KD moments.
Well, yeah, I've had a, you know, a stellar week so far. So, you know, lots of
changes.
Because
you've been up and down
to Sid Vicious.
The country, yes.
Yeah.
Racking up those flyer miles in Sin City.
Yeah, got some good TV stuff going on and, you know, just sort of rocking and rolling, really. Loving the weather.
Excellent.
28 degrees in Melbourne today. It was incredible.
I know. Well, I thought it was actually a bit hotter than that. I went and sat outside for 5 minutes when I crawled out of bed.
Oh, you're poor.
Yeah,
love.
I'm feeling a bit terrible. It's not appropriate. Why don't we have a song so we can get our breath back, because we've got a very special guest in the studio joining us for the first part of the program. So this is a bit of Bruno Mars.
And very
this
nice.
Is Just the Way You Are.
I think we're back. What do you reckon, Pete Dillon?
Yes, we're back. I was just turning down the music player.
Were you?
The record
were
player.
The on the wireless.
Yes.
Look, we've got a wonderful guest with us tonight. We've got the lovely Glenda Linscott with us. Good evening.
How do you do? Wonderful Glenda Linscott's trying to keep a straight face.
Right.
Because you're just making me laugh so much.
Oh. Well, you've worked with some very funny people. You should have... You should have no trouble holding your laughter. How do you get through a day with Colette Mann on the set?
Well, it was easy, actually, because I didn't actually work with Colette Mann.
Oh, did you?
No, because I was in the last year of the show, of Prisoner, and Colette and Val and all those people were the first 5 years, you see.
Right.
So they were years before my
So time. No vinegar tits for you?
No vinegar tits for me. No, I just had the freak. Wasn't that enough, don't you reckon?
Yeah. Perhaps we should talk about the show. The show we are speaking about is Prisoner, of course.
And otherwise known as Prisoner Cell Block H in the UK.
Oh, yes. Really?
Because we had all the UK fan people out last week. Well, this Friday, we
were
this big
in the
event.
Age, peering
I've
through
been,
something that
I have
like
been
jail.
In so many papers in the last couple of weeks because there was
just
Prisoner Cell Block. I know. And the opening of my show, simultaneous events on the one night. And that meant that I couldn't go and see K.D. Lang.
Oh, you couldn't get.
Oh, was you couldn't get.
See?
Couldn't get over there.
Straight, I couldn't get.
Couldn't get.
I'm still laughing at newly minted husband.
And there's some really off-colour stuff that we said off the microphones as well, which, you know, we dare you to talk about that.
Lucky I'm not well, darling. We could be in all manner of strife.
Let's talk about Bad Blood Blues. Tell us about
Bad Blood Blues.
The wonderful play that you're doing.
Wonderful play that I'm doing. Bad Blood Blues is a play written by an English playwright called Paul Sirrett from Stratford East in the UK. I believe it was on last year in London, and has been brought up by a young Australian producer called Karen Jamieson, and directed by the amazing Chris Parker of the music theatre. You all know about Chris Parker? You should. He was the lead in Mamma Mia.
Really?
Oh, yes. Ah. And and Chris and I, yeah, oh yeah, he's hot.
Because the lead lady in that, Anne Woods?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, she's on my list.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She has. I've heard about your list.
Yeah, well, I have an extensive list.
Yeah, Chris was in Daylight Saving with me, Nick Enright wrote, and that was 10 years ago this year. I'm horrified to realise that. So Chris has now moved on. He's directing a lot of music theatre. And because Paul Siret, who wrote Bad Blood Blues, is a musician, and it's written like a blues. It's like this wonderful, so the unbelievably gorgeous actor that I'm working with, Blessing Mukhuqua.
Oh, isn't he a doll? Oh my God.
I managed to speak to him on the weekend when we did Saturday Magazine, and he is an absolute blessing in so many
ways.
In
name and in nature, and I am so blessed to have him as my partner. He's amazing because it's his first play.
Yep.
He's done bits and pieces before, but it's his first, and it's without doubt one of the most challenging plays I have ever done, partly because of the writing and the fact that, you know, I've got so much to say.
You've got a lot of dialogue.
But it's because I'm a scientist, and you know, we're trying to find a cheap cure for AIDS in Africa, which is such a massive mission. And into my office one hot afternoon steps this young man. And oh my God, he says, I want to learn to speak English, but that is so not what he wants.
Is he after something a little more?
Oh, yes.
Oh, and you know what they say.
Oh, it's just thrilling. And for the two of us, it's like driving down the hairpin bend on, you know, a vertical side of a mountain. You know, there's so many twists and turns in the play. So it starts out like a delightful comedy, and you just do not expect where you're going to go. So
and look, the bulk of the story is it's about exploitation and guinea pigs in some respects, is it not?
It's about Tuskegee, which was an experiment that American doctors did from 1932, whenever it was, in the 1970s, where they used 600 poor, illiterate black farm workers, this is direct from the play, as guinea pigs to study the progression of syphilis.
Right.
But they told them they had bad blood. And they didn't tell them what they had.
Hence the bad blood,
blood blues. But what was appalling and unethical about it was that when they discovered in the 50s that syphilis could be cured by penicillin, didn't give it to these men. They didn't give it to them.
Because syphilis untreated in the long term becomes a very complex schizophrenic process.
Totally. They go
it's
mad.
Completely psychotic.
That's right. So he wanted to write a play about that, about the ethics of that, but somebody's already done it. So he's done
and
something.
And it's more contemporary to apply
much more
to
contemporary.
The HIV.
And it's got all these, absolutely, it's got all these relevances, I can't even speak, to Africa, but also to Australia too. So the whole thing is like, there's a gorgeous speech in it where she talks about equipoise, the balance. You know, it might be better to be on a placebo because AZT might be toxic as well to some people of different genetic nations than
white. What's the time frame that this play is set in?
Two time frames. It's 2001 and most of the bulk of the action takes place in early 1997.
Okay, so that's a decent time frame ago. I guess.
Yeah,
if you think about, you know, when HIV sort of reached that media prominence in the mid 80s, and you know, 10 years on from that, you would start to see some of the progression in treatments.
That's right.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of stuff that I've read says that, you know, that HIV and AIDS, the genesis of it is in Africa, so therefore the cure must come from Africa. And it's interesting to see sort of plays like this that continue to keep the dialogue of HIV open.
Absolutely.
Because there's a resurgence of transmission rates now, I think. So and people are still getting
message
it.
Message fatigue. You know,
well, we're also, you know, 20 or 30 years on from when the epidemic started, so we can now look at AIDS in an historical context and, you know, look at all of the fear and the, you know, the almost pathological hatred that was around for anybody who did have HIV or AIDS.
Yeah.
And sort of look at where we've come to now where, you know, it's a very manageable, in some most senses, HIV is a very manageable condition.
Well, yeah. I think that the risk of dying is reduced now to some degree. There will be a lot of people that die with HIV but not necessarily from it.
Probably die from complications of the drugs.
Exactly. Well, they're more likely to die with all of those ancillary issues that come with high cholesterol and
problems with the heart. It's part of the problem too, because there is this perception out there that people don't need to worry now because there will be treatments. You can go and get treatment and you can live with
the disease.
But
why would you want it?
Exactly. Why would you want it? And
why would you
roll
that dice?
And the other problem is that it's still infecting people and there's a resurgence of it. And people are getting tired of the message.
And it doesn't mean that we have to be less vigilant about protecting ourselves. So
does your play deliver any of those messages?
Well, what my scientist is doing is trying to find a treatment that will help prevent the transmission from mothers to babies.
Yep.
So she's doing an exercise and trying to reduce the spread of the virus. Mm-hmm. She's not trying to find the cure.
It's about prevention.
It's about prevention. So an AZT is not a cure. It's something that just allows you to live with the virus. So, yeah, it opens up all those misconceptions, and that's where the drama comes from between Blessing's character and mine, is that he believes that it's going to be a cure. And I'm going, it's not about a cure. It's about trying to work within the parameters that, you know, in an unfair world.
Mm.
And it's the first world, third world.
Oh,
and
I like it.
And finally, it's like, how do we solve a problem? It's like, you know, Maria, how do we solve a problem like HIV if we can't actually finally talk to each other and hear what we're saying?
Mm.
So the messaging is quite clear around, you know, being realistic and keeping communication open
And being that vigilant.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like there's some implicit messages there that are really important, that we're losing sight of that messaging. Yeah.
And it's also another important element is at what price do we solve this problem? There will be people who will suffer.
Absolutely. Mm.
So is that ethical?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
We could be going for hours.
Where's it showing?
Yes.
Oh, it's showing at Chapel Off Chapel, the Loft Theatre, which is in Pran, it's off Little Chapel Street in Melbourne.
And it's going till the 26th of November.
So we've got matinees at 4 p.m. on Saturday, Sunday. I think it goes Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday this week, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday next week with matinees thrown in. Sprinklings of matinees.
And it's something that anybody can go and see and try and understand.
Except that please don't bring your children. And it really is strong adult content.
Is there any nudity?
A little bit.
Because you're not scared of nudity, I believe. Might have seen you get the ladies out in Shirley Valentine.
That was...
That's another occasion where she got an orbs out.
No, Shirley Valentine was not... Amanda Muggleton got her year off.
I beg your pardon.
But that was because she played Josie in Steaming, and 10 years later I played Josie in Steaming. Now, you did have to get your clothes off for that.
Yes.
And I think Amanda's much more kind of free about... But the playwright, Mr. Willie Russell, does not require the actrine
to be nude.
No. Okay,
and you got to play with another one of my really good buddies, Virginia Gay.
Oh, my God, I played her mother.
I know.
Oh, my God. Oh, she's heaven.
She is a delight.
Absolute delight.
She's reasonably tall as well.
That's why I think I got the role.
I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it was about your ability.
Because midgets have tall kids too. This is true. Well, she was a joy to work with.
She's a darling.
And I don't think my character's coming back, though, because I think she's a bit out there.
Right.
Well, look, we're very pleased to have you in Melbourne doing Bad Blood Blues at Chapel Off Chapel. Look, we really appreciate your time tonight, Glenda. Thank you so much for coming in. It's very late and we do appreciate it.
I just couldn't love it more. I love you all.
Glenda Lynn Scott here on Salt and Pepper. We'll be back with you very shortly. Oh, what a delight she was.
Oh, look, she is such a lovely creature. And
have her back every week.
Yeah, but what a really fantastic play that she's doing and the messaging that she's getting out there into the wider world. I just think she's a real gem.
She is. We must make sure we go and see it, Serena.
Yes, I think. And she said a bit of champers might be in order afterwards, so I'm all over that.
Like a fat chick on a cupcake.
Like a fat boy on a smartie.
There you go.
Let's talk about the PM and the conscience vote. I've got a bone to pick.
The bone is all yours.
Is it?
Yes.
Really?
It's a long time since you've heard that. The bone is all yours.
Yes, and funnily enough, not that attractive. No. Look, we know that the Fairfax Media have published an opinion piece by La Gillard saying that she's going to, you know, back a conscience vote, but her position doesn't change, nor does she feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the position of the ALP shouldn't change around same-sex marriage.
There's been a bit of breaking news this afternoon in another piece, but I'm going to let you go first and pick your bone.
Okay, if there's breaking news, we should break that.
Well, it's not so much breaking, but Mark Arbib, who is from the right faction of the New South Wales Labor Party, who are in some sense going to be blocking this, has now called on the Liberal Party and the more forward-thinking members of the Liberal Party to support a conscience vote. So whilst we say it's all entirely doomed, with some support from the New South Wales right of the Labor Party, bringing some of the more sensible people like Malcolm Turnbull on board.
Malcolm Turnbull won't do it.
Well, because it's a conscience totally vote, gutless. They don't have to put their hand up in the party room and say, blah. So they're not really going to go against anything, and this is the joy of a conscience vote. I'm still not optimistic about it, but when the New South Wales right is pushing, then we might just see there may be, you know, those one or two votes that we need along with the crossbenchers to actually get it across the line.
I don't know. I think, you know, I watched Twitter quite closely today and people are very much poo-pooing the idea of a conscience vote, and I'm in agreement with that.
I think
that it's just got knobs on. I think that it's a good position for her to come from, because then she's saying that she's done what's been asked for, but it's destined to fall over. On December the 3rd, we will not be given the right to marry. We will be given some Diet Coke solution.
Well, it won't happen on December 3rd. All we'll see on December 3rd is the Labor Party saying, this is our position, and then it goes to debate. One of the other things I thought interesting today, a new set of polls out, which show an increase across every party vote. So Labor voters, Greens voters, coalition voters, the vote has increased in favour of same-sex marriage to the point where it's now something like 63 or 64% across the board with no question. This is telling me something that the pollies are not listening to the population.
But this has been my ongoing bag, is that I have been saying from day one, since we've raised this as a conversation item, that Julia Gillard refuses to listen. She fundamentally refuses to listen to the Galaxy polls. She you know, the Morgan Gallup stuff, whatever. She will not listen. And that, I think that in and of itself is so telling.
It's going to be her undoing. I actually wrote her an email today.
Did you?
Yes, and said, look, I don't think what you're doing is right, because your relationship is non-traditional. And so to talk about traditional values that have affected our nation and our culture, when your relationship is non-traditional, that's the first thing that gets me bothered. The second thing that I put in the email is, you know, she was a socialist. She was at university. She fought for all sorts of things.
And
she wouldn't
rights.
Be in the position now as our first female prime minister if those rights hadn't been taken up by others. And I want her to be courageous. I want her. She's already had the courage.
It's beyond the scope of what she can achieve, Pete. You're expecting too much from her.
Well, she's had the courage to put the carbon tax through, and she made it happen.
Oh, look, she just got into bed with the right people. But, you know, she told a bold-faced lie. She told a bold-faced lie. So
that's the want of a politician. It was a non-core promise.
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think we're expecting too much from her. She's not going to shift on her position. She's going to be remembered as the PM
that didn't
allow gay marriage to take place. She's a laughing stock.
As much as we thought Howard was that person.
No. I think it's not going to come from Gillard. And, frankly, I'm just ashamed of her as Prime Minister.
She's shot herself in the foot. And it will go down in history that she made a very big error.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a very calculated and intentional error, which I think is really stupid. I can't believe the advice that she's getting is to continue to do this at the risk of, you know, any relationship she's built with the Christian right. I mean, I understand that she needs to maintain the integrity of those relationships. They were the vehicle for her to come into office. But, you know, we've said before that every vote in Parliament needs to be a conscience vote. So, you know,
There was somebody else the other day, I'm just trying to remember who it was, over the weekend, who said, this is not a matter of conscience, this is a matter of legislation, and they have the power to change the legislation. It's really that simple. In 2004, the then government under Howard changed the legislation to absolutely exclude marriages that were solemnised overseas between gay couples, and to state that the Marriage Act is between a man and a woman. They did that on a Friday night and it went through at midnight because they had the support. The only thing that's stopping Gillard doing this is because she's in a minority government and she's too many people to please.
Indeed. And you know what?
Greg's,
she's gotten,
Greg's
she's
nodding
gotten,
off on us now.
She's gotten into bed with all the wrong people, and shame on her, you
Indeed.
Know? Shame on her.
Let's talk a bit about Adelaide, because they're probably feeling a little bit hurt as well.
Look, there was a Pride March. I think it's a Pride March. Yeah, the Pride Parade on Saturday in Adelaide. It produced a crew of about a dozen placard-carrying religious protesters who marched along the Pride on Saturday, spewing homophobia from their megaphone. The Feast Festival Parade crew were, you know, very valiant in trying to avoid any confrontations, but there was just so much verbal abuse that was traded on that day. And the event was, you know, a really colourful and great success. But again, you know, another freedom of speech moment spoilt by the religious nutbags of our country.
And this was another church group.
Another church group.
They previously attended a gay marriage event back in May, leading to a very widely reported fracas. Their words not used enough in common parlance, I should say.
Well, it's a bit nice.
And the protesters are regularly seen in the London Wall pedestrianised shopping centre, where their alarming announcements raise the hackles of both religious and non-religious people. These are some of these folk who stand in the street and preach at you.
They're also the ones that say that lesbian couples they're abused and gay participants are pedophiles. It's more about
stand up on really nice arguments, don't they?
Yeah, less about the Bible and more about just hating gays and dressing it up as religion.
Yes, and then yet our next story, there's a lot of people who are turned off the church because of the church's homophobia.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So this is sort of
a
converse, a bit of a dichotomy. New research into Christianity in Australia has revealed that religious intolerance to homosexuality is a key reason why people reject the church. Christian media group Olive Tree Media have said almost 30% of those surveys say the stances by churches on homosexuality block them from engaging with Christianity. It's a really interesting story.
Yeah, it's saying that Australians are moving away from their religious roots, with 3 in 10, 29% expressing that whilst they'd been shaped in a religious household and had religious connection, they were no longer religious.
Mm.
And, you know, the staunchly homophobic position of some religious organisations seems to inform that now, which is, I think, a bit interesting.
And that's 30%. That's
a good whack of the population.
Oh, that's a massive whack of the population.
I wonder what Jim Wallace thinks of that.
Well,
because this is a news item that comes out of WA, so yes. He's quite active over there.
He is. Now, there was a bit of a TV doco on ABC One the other night with a group of gay and lesbian ballroom dancers. And
over in Northcote.
Yeah, their story about tackling homophobia. Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I do intend to see it because I have a friend that goes to this dance hall and participates in same-sex dancing.
Now, is this the one in Fitzroy that's just had a very recent stay? They were to be evicted from...
This one was in Northcote.
Right.
So I think that's where this was filmed.
All right.
it's all around... the world's biggest same-sex dance sport competition. And, you know, it's considered to be a really traditional support and being really heterosexual and quite dominant roles. You know, the man is very much the dominant. And there's been a history of really inflexible rules barring same-sex couples. But, you know, it's these guys, they're out there, they're dancing, and it's just... You know, they've recently had a dance sport competition at the Gay Games in Cologne, and they've been there, they've competed, and this show tracks that journey, I believe.
It does. It's actually quite an uplifting show to watch at the same time as it's tackling those issues around homophobia within sport, and dance sport is a sport regardless of whether you agree with that or not. It's like synchronized swimming is a sport.
Well.
We're using the term loosely, I know. But by the same token, it tracks a journey and sort of it does provide a little bit of hope because the Gay Games dance sport competition is massive.
And the Gay Games are massive. It's a real winner in terms of promoting, you know, countries coming together in the spirit of celebrating homosexuals in sport.
Indeed. I've got another story about homosexuals in sport that we'll do in
is
the international
clean?
News. Yes, but that does look awfully like Noni Hazelhurst making her way in. We better get
on
with this.
In. Let's get Noni's in. I do believe Noni Hazelhurst is with us this evening. Look at you all relaxed and
that
flitting
music,
by.
That music always makes me think I'm in an elevator.
Really? Yes. I have visions of you running along the beach with a caftan.
Oh.
In a caftan.
Singing the sound of music.
You know.
Or my friend the wind, as Demetri Rousseau sang.
My friend the wind.
My friend the wind. Oh, it's come to that already.
Yes, it's gone down already.
Oh, the tone has officially been lowered.
Yes.
Welcome, Nones.
Tone lower, that's me.
Look, this week we want to talk to you about journalism. Right? This thing that we do each week. I read an interesting profile of someone who calls himself a journalist on Twitter the other day. And this person said in their bio that they would rather win a Logie than a Walkley. I know.
How old was this person?
This person's in their late 30s.
You would think at that age more common sense, but clearly
hello.
Not.
And so it got me thinking, what is journalism and what is just... Junkie. Journo versus Junkie. So you've got the journalistic integrity of fantastic news reporting and coverage, the reportage that we like and love.
And a command of English.
And a command of the language and its grammatical nuances. Versus trailer trash reporting.
Or, as it's also known, Today Tonight.
Yeah.
Or common. It's commentary, isn't it, as opposed to journalism.
Well, I mean, I don't know that shows like Today Tonight are... I think there's a place for them because it's all driven by consumer input. So they're out there making the show that people want. So they want the petrol deals. They want the dollar dazzlers.
They want the unwed mothers. They want the horrible detention story that they ran 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, but you don't provide them with that information in that way, in the way that they do. It could actually be done with sort of an altruistic
I think there has
subtext.
To be a bit of dumbing down to some degree because it's the slot. But there's the canning of George Negus recently.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Do you think that was a bad thing?
I think it was a bad time slot. It was a bad time slot. I think he was...
People don't want to watch George Negus.
Set up from the beginning. Set up from the beginning. If you think about 10 years ago, the 6:30 slot was Neighbours on Channel 10.
Mm.
So now it's the project.
Well, like the catch-up on Channel 9. I think that was set up at the beginning to say, see, women's television doesn't work.
Yep. And that's the thing, is that you need to be making television at that time of day for the masses. And I think that's the gap that shows like Today Tonight and A Current Affair. I think they plug those gaps really neatly. But then I'm reading on Twitter, I'm reading this journalist who's got a fairly decent profile in newspaper media and on television, saying that they'd rather win a Logie than a Walkley.
See, I find that repugnant.
I find it really disturbing.
Anybody who's slogged their butt through a communications or a journalism degree, who's tried to work their way, particularly as a woman, through television and newspapers over the last 3 decades, would probably punch this woman in the head. Mm. And I'm thinking the likes of Nick Chavastik, who's now hosting Statewide Drive, spent years working for Channel 10 as a reporter, has worked for the ABC for years. You know, they've really, really earned their stripes. And I can think of no more deserving honour for a journalist of that quality than a Walkley Award.
It's the pinnacle of achievement.
Well, because it's from your peers.
It is.
Whereas the Logies are a popularity contest.
But that, to me, spoke about where journalism in Australia has landed.
Well, it's
to
like
some
we were
degree.
Talking about the other week, celebrity. You know, does journalism have to have some impartiality?
Absolutely.
Is that a prerequisite for a good journalist?
I think a journalist with integrity, but there's also a place for journalists who are either quite leftist or quite Andrew Boltist.
Miranda Varnas.
And if you read this Ann Summers piece that we were talking about a while ago in the Monthly, I think it was September's issue of the Monthly, Andrew Bolt was never a ferocious right-wing fundamentalist.
No, that's right.
He's a character. He saw a gap in the market and he filled it.
Exactly.
But if you reveal your bias, doesn't that then make you a commentator rather than a journalist?
It makes you an opinion.
An opinioner.
It makes you a bag of wind in most cases.
Well, you know, I mean, there's an ongoing discussion that Pete and I have around the commentary in particular of people like Miranda Devine. So Miranda's on the record with having some fairly staunch right-wing conservative views that eliminates anything that threatens the combination of heterosexuality, monogamy and long-term marriage. Fair enough. My bigger issue is taking the publishers of these types of opinions to task. You're not going to impact on the Andrew Bolts and the Miranda Devines of the world because they speak to a certain population.
Mm.
But...
On purpose.
On purpose. And that's their job. I think the bigger issue is taking on HWT, it's taking on Fairfax. It's saying, you know, your position is consistently this.
But see, I don't think it is their job. I think that's the niche they want to carve for themselves because they sense that they can achieve notoriety and fame and a higher profile.
The publisher or the journalist?
By being controversial, deliberately controversial.
It's the publisher, not the journalist. It's the publisher we need to be taking to task.
The publisher doesn't care. They just want to sell papers.
Exactly.
And if they've got the moment.
And if they've got issues, if they've got people like Bolt and Devine writing for them, which both are HWT titles, then they have...
The readership.
They have the readership because that's what they want.
Star power. It's star power, which is back to the Logies versus the Walkleys. I mean, your average Herald Sun reader wouldn't know what a Walkley was.
No.
But they certainly know what a Logie is.
Oh, my
word. But is that how we've become... Has that become our barometer for success? And if it has, what do we think about that?
Well, I think that unless it's a peer-awarded Logie, an outstanding Logie, as opposed to a most popular Logie... I think the Logies have systematically ruined any credibility that they ever had.
They've deprofessionalised the industry and the important work that's being done.
Utterly.
And back into the days of the Sullivans and Cop Shop and those seminal Australian television programs.
Homicide.
Yeah. They were the days when you coveted a Logie because it was...
There was some prestige attached to it.
That's the word I was after, some prestige.
Because that was also the days before reality television.
Mm.
The days before lifestyle television, in fact. The days before cable.
Mm.
You know, so literally the only offerings were
7,
news,
9,
current
10,
affairs,
ABC.
And drama, sport, light entertainment, which is as a category seems
where
to
we sort of put everything. Well, that's where we put everything else, wasn't it? The Don Lane show.
It was comedy and variety and Rick Birch's specials on the ABC. You know, there was a lot of stuff that came under the light entertainment banner. On the Tonight shows, they had a group of singers and a group of dancers, and you know,
Graham Kennedy,
the orchestra.
Mm.
But I think with journalism, I think anyone who comes out and says, I'd rather have a Logie than a Walkley, deserves absolutely no credibility whatsoever.
And I think that's where you shatter your own credibility with that sort of comment. I could no sooner want that than walk to the moon.
Mm.
I'd love a Walkley.
And it reflects that thing of, you know, the anti-intellectual thing that's going on now, that anyone who has a university education or anyone who is able to express an opinion other than a three-word slogan is
or a 140-character tweet.
Yeah, is seen as a wanker.
Mm. Or having ideas above their station.
That's right. We have a place in Mount Tambourine in Queensland, and our local mayor, who lives off the mountain, accused all the people on the mountain publicly because we felt that the council wasn't representing the mountain's best interests environmentally, of being intellectually advantaged.
Right.
Not realising that put him into the category of intellectually
stupid.
Disadvantaged.
Yes.
And this was reported quite seriously, and, you know, I just find it staggering. But it really does mean it's a whole diminution of thought and discourse and
Are we dumbing ourselves down?
We're not dumbing ourselves down.
Or are we
down.
Being dumbed down?
It's a very deliberate thing.
Absolutely.
I think it's a very deliberate thing.
If you go through any, and let's use the Herald Sun as an example, I quite often, I have a razor-sharp ability to spot spelling errors.
Me too.
It's the first thing I see
pedantic.
On anything.
That's
pedantic.
Me.
I saw this van the other day that had some spray painting signage done, and there was an error in it, and I had to take another street.
Mm.
I was so disturbed. Mm. I thought, you've wasted your money, idiot.
I used to get press releases that if they
go through and correct them.
A spelling or a grammar error.
So annoying.
Sorry, we're not talking to talent, because if you're going to take the time to try and pitch me talent.
Yep.
Learn to spell
or
get somebody to proofread your bloody press release.
And would you ever go and see a house in a sort, S-O-R-T, after area?
Oh, no, no.
And that's the thing, is that, you know, young journos are missing all of the building blocks at this stage. They're all just that they want the bright lights and the camera, and they want to be sticking a microphone in front of their face and going, this is me, I'm reporting live from Kmart. And, you know, that's not journalism.
But,
that's
but
not telling
being
a story.
On telly is seen as the epitome and the acme
and
the
isn't the,
apex
the epitome
of
as
success.
Journalism.
Because there is a perception that there's money in it. Now, you talk
if you're
to,
not on television, you don't exist.
You talk to anyone who works casually on television or occasionally on television. And there's no money in it. There's no more money in it than bloody flipping burgers at McDonald's.
But, you know, I remember newspapers when there were no photographs of the people who wrote the articles.
And that's as it should be.
Well, yes. I'm not interested in what Michelle Grattan looks like. I'd rather not know.
Well, we actually bumped into her
recently. It was,
well, yeah, you know.
Years have not been kind.
If you want to go on Barry Cassidy's program, that's fine. But, you know, what is this about letting us see what they look like? I don't care what they look like.
Interesting you bring up Barry Cassidy's program. Now, if Barry Cassidy was a woman, and I know I'm jumping onto a different...
He wouldn't be on television.
jumping onto a different bandwagon. Mm-hmm. The man looks like a Sharpay.
Mm.
Now, and I think he's a credible journalist.
Mm.
He's working for the right network. His partner works for the same network. If he was a woman, he wouldn't be on the telly.
Don't start me.
All you've got Lee Sales.
Mm.
She does the 7:30 report. Is that right?
Yeah, well, she's now boring us to death.
Well, she's also going to have a baby soon, so she's going to go off and, you know, give birth. You've got...
Annabelle Crabb.
I don't know what she's on. Is she on telly?
Yeah, the drum.
ABC.
The drum.
Yeah.
Right. You've got a couple of female reporters on 60 Minutes.
Yeah. Liz, what's her face, still gets to go. Mm.
Liz Hayes, and you've got Tara.
Tracy Grimshaw.
She's on A Current Affair. Mm. You've got, who's on SBS?
Hello, I'm Lillian Chin.
What are they? I mean, apart from Lee Sales, most of them are nearly 50 or over.
Heather Ewart on the ABC. She's also another senior. Ali Moore, who presents Late Line. She's of our
but none of them look like Barry Cassidy.
No.
Not a sharp
or Laurie Oakes.
And the thing is,
that's
Margaret the whole thing. Laurie Oakes has never pulled into task around his ever-expanding frame.
Girth.
No.
Okay. Whereas it's fairly on the record that any woman on television, front and centre, if she starts to get a little bit pork choppy, bit jowly, the tom-toms come a-knocking. Mm.
So if you're a journalist who claimed that she or he would rather have a Logie than a Walkley.
They also probably would rather have
a female,
have a...
she'd better hurry up.
Exactly. Mm. Thanks, Nones. It's been lovely to see you.
Your opinions are valued as always.
Bye-bye, darling.
Bye.
Hello, this is Alison Moyer. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
My air guitar, doll.
I'm all a flutter. There's been far too many references to male genitalia tonight. I'm feeling a bit violated.
And oddly, our first story is about a stroke.
About a homosexual. Look,
a stroke
honestly.
Made a young fellow gay. Now, look, let's preface the story first. That a young rugby player's life was dramatically changed after a stroke during a freak accident made him a homosexual. At the time of the accident, he worked in a bank and had gotten engaged to his girlfriend.
No, it's because he's Welsh.
Yes, darling. You know of my love of the Welsh. He tried to do a backflip in front of his mates.
I want to meet a Welsh girl, by the way.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
oh.
I do. Or at least do a beautiful woman that can do a Welsh accent.
Well, I've got friends who are Welsh.
Awesome.
So yeah, I'm sure there's a lesbian in Wales. Mm. He was trying to impress his mates with a backflip and broke his neck, resulting in the stroke. Resulting in him all of a sudden waking up retraining as a hairdresser.
And losing, gayer than Moomba. Mm. Look, he was taken to a local hospital where his girlfriend and family waited for the news that he was okay. When he woke up, he decided that he was a homosexual and he now lives with his boyfriend above the hairdressers that he now works with. It sounds strange, but when I came around, I felt completely different. I wasn't interested in women anymore. I was definitely gay. Dude, you were probably always gay. I think this is just a convenient excuse
to come out. You think?
I don't believe it for a moment. And I know that you can undergo rapid, personality changes with strokes and all of that, but I don't think strokes have the capacity to alter your sexuality.
There must have been something inherent. There must have been a seed there.
There must have been a whiff of lavender about him.
Water on. But it's quite extraordinary because he's gone from this sort of big, burly, rugby-playing bloke to this very slim, lisping...
Yeah, but I mean, how many gay people do you know that go through physical transformations once they come to terms with their inner homo?
Once they come out, I grew 1.5 inches and went from a size 7.5 to a size 9 shoe.
You're such a size queen. Look, I know
I'm
that...
Serious.
Look, my whole... Everything about you changes when you integrate the internal with the external.
Yes.
So, again, I don't think this is compelling information. I just think, young lad was probably, a bit of a poof beforehand, harboured some same-sex desire, had a stroke, which is awful for the record.
Yes.
Now he's lost a bit of weight, he might perfect that backflip. But coming up to... 10:45.
Already.
By the way.
Goodness me.
I've just been given
the
nod
time
by the button monkey.
Two transgender stories, one positive and one not so.
Mm.
Let's probably start with the...
let's lead with the good.
The good, yes. First transgender and gay MPs taking seats in Poland. They've just elected a new parliament, held its first sitting just yesterday. And two new members, a transgender woman and an openly gay man, have been given seats.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrific. In a country that's very traditionally Roman Catholic and has given us one of the more recent popes.
Well, they're now part of a new progressive party, which has become the third largest party after the October 9th elections. So, they push more liberal causes, this party, in this country. The movement wants to see the stranglehold of the church to be loosened on society, promote gay equality and change the country's near total ban on abortion. This is a really progressive party,
so this is
the ideal place for these guys and these men and women to have membership.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's really wonderful. And it's a great transgender story for...
Yes, it is a great transgender story.
For trans people around the world. It's and very
sadly,
aspirational.
We've got to follow it with something
Bloody
that's
Kelly
not
Osborne.
So nice. Well, I don't care for her. And I think this is not only a story, but a nomination for the Donald this evening.
Just look, she's a spokesperson for Madonna and Lorde's Material Girl line. And she's spoken out. She's had a red hot go about her ex-fiancé, you know, Hell Hath No Fury. Mm. His name is Luke Worrell, and the woman who came between their engagement, a transgender model named Elle Schneider. So during a recent interview, this former reality TV show star, you know, she was anything but glamorous. Having to tell my parents ex-fiancé Luke had cheated on me with a tranny was so humiliating. Everybody kept telling me that Luke was cheating on me, but I never believed them. It's hard enough to get your head around someone cheating on you, but when someone else is a chick with a dick... I'd always thought the worst way to get cheated on was with an ugly girl. Okay, and Kelly, the pot calling black.
Yeah, well,
you know,
first of all, you ain't no oil painting yourself. And, you know, there's a litany of things in here that are just wrong.
It's just so wrong. I mean, her media and her PR advisors, her mum's like the quintessential fag hag.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Everybody loves Sharon Osbourne, and she's a collector of the homosexual ilk.
Yes.
And, you know, to promote such, you know, to rear such a homophobic kid, I mean, she should know better.
There's a big question mark over her brother's head as well, just...
Well, he's actually just fathered a child, so I guess that will stymie any coming out for a bit longer.
Speaking of coming out, and big day out, New Zealand's big day out, beautiful.
Nice little segue. Look, I saw what you did there. Well
has cancelled Odd Future. This is New Zealand's big day out festival, which is to happen in Auckland in the next couple of weeks, I believe, following complaint about the band Odd Future, whose raps are at times littered with faggot, anti-gay slang. Auckland Council has intervened to ensure that Odd Future will not appear at the annual music festival.
Good. You know,
and
they,
this is another good thing. This is New Zealand taking a stand.
Well, also, these guys had a go about Tegan and Sarah.
Yes.
Who are a lesbian band. Mm. And, you know, and it's also off the back of the news story that we talked about last week, which was the Jamaican music industry being all about homophobia and not really liking the gays. I think we're coming up to some messages.
We will, and we'll have a track, but I've got one last piece.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Gosh.
We've over the last couple of weeks, talked about sportsmen.
And
sportsmen coming out. Another sports person has come out of the closet. His name is David Testo. He's a professional soccer player. He's from America, plays in the Canadian
league,
sort of Canadian league in soccer. 30 years old, and he's basically said everybody has known about this, but he's felt very much time that it became public. You know, his family knew, and some of his teammates knew, but he's never really felt right in not saying anything
good on
about
him.
It. So, David Testo, good looking lad as well. Just
have we got time to return quickly to one last news item nationally that
yes,
we missed on?
Yes, of course we have.
Look,
because you're in charge today.
Well, I just want to talk about the New South Wales Parliament. They're on November the 18th. They're going to have a Transgender Remembrance Day, which
I think
is wonderful.
Mm.
Around the 20th of November each year, trans groups across the globe pause for a Transgender Day of Remembrance. Names of the dead are read out, followed by discussion about possible ways to create a safer world for gender diverse citizens. So the Gender Centre magazine poller Finn Borg, he's stated that for the past few years, we've seen a growing level of understanding and support from the police force and from the city council and from many employers and government departments. The way for transgenders is still difficult, and there are serious shortfalls in employment opportunity and access to education.
Mm-hmm.
This is the stuff we really know about. So the New South Wales Parliament is leading the charge nationally for
Excellent.
Us. And on the November the 18th, it's a Friday, there will be a Transgender Day of Remembrance. And it's a way to work together to bring the number of victims down year by year through education of general public and engagement with those in society in a position to make a difference. Fantastic.
Excellent.
Really, really liking
really
that. Let's go to some messages, hey?
We will.
Joy.
Joy.
94.9.
If the stars were mine, I'd give them all to you. I'd pluck them down right from the sky and leave it only...
And we're back. I don't know what happened at the end of that song, Peter.
It's actually the end of the song. She's an unusual girl, Melody Gardot.
You know, you've given me some of her tunes in the past, and I've just not been able to feel the Gardot love, I've got to say. I don't know.
I love that song. It's just about if I could make you happy, if I could... do anything, I would pull the stars out of the sky and give them to you in a bottle because they would brighten up your life.
And I like the lyrics. I guess the composition for me doesn't really float my boat for some reason.
She's got an acquired brain injury.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you briefly the story because I know we've got about 30 seconds. She was living with her grandmother, her Russian grandmother, in Los Angeles. and she was a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And she went for a ride on her bike, and she got hit on her bike and had an acquired brain injury. She still has, she's still very, very photosensitive, so she has to wear dark glasses all of the time.
Did she wake up gay?
No. she walks with a cane.
Yes.
And part of her recovery was music therapy. And fantastic. That's where she discovered her ability for jazz. We might next week play her version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which I think is the best in the world.
Look, we're coming up to 6 minutes to midnight. I think we've got some messages and then it's time for the Donald.
Oh, the Donald.
Gee, it's that time of night. It's 4 minutes
where did
to
that
midnight.
Hour go?
I know. Look, we've had a jam-packed show tonight. We've had some great highs, and there's been a couple of lows, which leads us into the nominations of the Donald Award.
There are two nominees. Well, two types of nominees.
Two standout.
The first nomination is Kelly Osbourne. You know, you think that somebody who, like her mother, is also a bit of a fag hag, she'd be a bit more sympathetic. And, you know, hell hath no fury and all of that.
And, you know, let it go, babe. You know, your partner's found his true calling, so wish him well.
Bugger off. The other is the Christian group who got out with the megaphones and gave the Adelaide Pride Parade a bit of curry. And it's not the first time they've done this. I think they've proven themselves to be wankers. But I'm leaving it entirely in your hands, young lady. I'm just providing you with nominations.
Look, I think, you know, the Christians are always great fodder.
Oh,
they really are. They're great fodder.
Without them, we would never show.
Well, without Julia Gillard and without the Christians, we wouldn't have the stock standard nominees to default to when everybody else has behaved. So, look, I think, you know, the Christians...
For that reason, you'll go elsewhere, I'd reckon.
Well, look, I've got to give it to Kelly Osbourne because she is such a twat. I mean, honestly, you know, to completely have a go at transgender people, to have a go at gay people and chicks with dicks, and it's just, it's got wrong written all over it.
As we used to say when we were kids, shut your face and give your bum a go. Kelly Osbourne.
Yes, well, there's a bit of that. Kelly Osbourne, we salute you. You are the winner of the Donald this week. It's been a wonderful show. Thank
you, Pete.
Best
we pop in the Magna and get over the bridge,
darling. We do, and thanks, Greg, Button Monkey.
Thanks, Greg, as always.
We'll see you all next week.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Noon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night?
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.